Now, the Women's World Cup is over with the U.S. defeating the Netherlands in the finals yesterday 2-0. That could inspire a new generation of girls and boys to join the game. And if you have daughters in particular who play, our next guest says you may want to know more about their risk of concussion. It might be higher than you think. Research shows that women and girls may face a higher risk of concussions than men and boys, and they may also experience more severe concussions and take longer to recover. And our guest says it's not just the headers that are behind these injuries. Tracy Sneddon is a pediatric nurse and assistant professor in the School of Nursing at UW-Madison. She specializes in adolescent concussions, sports safety, injury prevention and recovery, and overall student health and well-being. Tracy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, you wrote a piece about this for USA Today. What is it that most of us might not know about girls and women and athletic concussions?
Yeah, I think the point of that piece was to bring awareness that women and girls in soccer do actually incur a fair amount of concussion that we don't often speak about. Often the media, the attention in both science and other, is placed on the contact sports that men or boys play, most specifically football and ice hockey. So I think more than anything, it was just to bring awareness to the general public about there is a lot going on with our girls and our women who are playing soccer.
Before we get more into the risks, you mentioned in your piece you have a daughter who played at UW-Madison. Your message is not soccer is dangerous, don't do it.
You're absolutely correct. I think any physical activity for our kids, our youth, our young adults is really important. So that's not at all what I'm trying to inspire. We do have two sons who played ice hockey, also a high concussion risk, and a daughter, as you say, who played here at Madison women's soccer. So very important to keep our kids active.
That said, what don't we know? What do we need more research on when it comes to girls and women and concussions?
Yeah, I think there's been a number of studies at the high school and the college level that have told us that the rate of concussion in women and girls is higher when compared to men. Specifically in soccer, we have seen some studies say as much as 3 times higher at the high school level than in boys and men. So what we don't know is why that might be occurring. And there's a couple, you know, hypotheses as scientists and as others that tell us those might be the reason. One could just be sheer physiological. Their neck structure, their ligaments aren't as strong as some of the men and boys that we're comparing to. Potentially it's a matter of culture and that women and girls are more apt to report their concussions than maybe our boys and our men are. And third, is there, you know, some underlying hormonal connection or some genetic component that actually is causing more concussions? More work is needed in all those areas.
I understand we have at least some preliminary brain scanning that's going on that says, hey, maybe it is more than that second option you mentioned, that girls are more likely to report or be reported. Maybe something different is happening in the brain.
Yeah, I think just some early work's been done. They've been small studies with small samples, not a lot to really bring a strong association to, and that's where more work needs to be done. And I think we're seeing some of those studies that are starting to gain some momentum. I mentioned in my piece specifically, there's a large study that's funded by the NCAA and Department of Defense that's looking at hundreds of concussions, both from, like you're describing, head scans to blood draws, signs and symptoms, and trying to really get a sense of what that might look like.
Talking to Tracy Sneddon, pediatric nurse and assistant professor in the School of Nursing at UW-Madison, looking at the risk of concussion in sports, specifically for girls and women in soccer. She says there's more research that needs to be done. Part of the changes that seem to be happening in youth sports more and more seems to be what happens after that first head injury, how long you keep the kid off the field. Are you seeing a culture change there in girls soccer and other youth sports?
That's a loaded question. And I think, you know, amidst what we've been watching through the weeks for World Cup, mm-hmm. it comes down to what are the protocols? What are the standards? What are the guidelines for the level of play that's occurring? So we have a pretty good sense on what goes on at the pro level, the NCAA level. They have, you know, supposedly well-established guidelines and protocols. What we don't really have a good sense of is at the youth level and who's diagnosing, who's supervising, what their recovery looks like, when are they being returned to the field? And I think the greater question is even, are they playing other sports or for another team at the same time? So who's really monitoring when they're placed back on the field and what is their risk level?
What do we know about the health risks of that second concussion soon after the first one?
Yeah, I think that's our greatest concern. And what we see from the literature and from the science is that generally, although it's rare, and generally what we see is that it's in the ages less than 18 years, they are pretty significant, that second impact syndrome, as we call it. And what ensues when someone who is not fully recovered at the brain level sustains another hit to the head, that generally results in significant cerebral swelling or edema that often results in death before our very eyes on the pitch, on the field, on the basketball court, wherever that might be.
And we had this scary moment in the World Cup game yesterday. Kelly O'Hara of the American team had that head-to-head contact with one of the Dutch players. They were off the field. They were back on the field before halftime. And then it looks like there's more evaluation, and O'Hara then was subbed in the second half. That had some people scratching their heads, like, why was she back out on the field that quickly?
Yeah, so I think this is a continuing question in all of sports, especially those who are played on the big stage, where millions and millions of people are, you know, making their own opinion, taking their own notes about how things should be handled. In this case, no matter what, the players were removed for evaluation and potential treatment, and then in this case, they were placed back on the field minutes after evaluation. So the tricky thing with concussion is we evaluate a couple different things. We looked at the mechanism of injury, and as everyone who was watching this hit, likely their jaw dropped. It was a substantial hit. They were on the ground for a number of minutes. So mechanism itself already tells us a lot about the injury. But what we don't always know is the signs and symptoms. Do they occur immediately? Often they occur minutes, hours, even days later. And then we don't have the sense of reporting. You know, we're relying on the athlete themselves to give us a sense of, are they okay? Are you feeling this or that? So there's a little bit of mud here since we don't have a objective way to diagnose and identify concussion. So, you know, that's a very loaded question today. We're seeing it all over the media, on Twitter. Everyone is making a call on, was that appropriate? Was it not? Did FIFA make a mistake? What is the protocol for concussion in, you know, that area of soccer? Is it a substitution issue, because there are a very limited number of substitutions at the FIFA level? And is that playing into the handling of injuries all, not just concussion at that level?
One cultural change I think I'm seeing, and I've seen other people write about this, if you look at NFL commentary during games, it used to be, hey, this player, this guy in this case, they're tough. They took a tough hit to the head and they're back out there. Wow, awesome. And now I think the language is changing, I hope at the youth level too. Is that something you see, that it's not a sign of toughness to go back out there after that head hit?
Gosh, another great question, Rob. So what we saw yesterday was the pure response from the public, and even at the time, of, wow, she went back in after that substantial hit. She actually returned to the field. But not long after, in the second half of that game, there was another substantial hit between a U.S. and a Netherlands player, and that individual actually was bleeding on the time at the field and came off quickly for treatment and assessment, actually had her head bandaged and returned back to the field. The reaction in the media was completely different for those two scenes. So the first one, the media was surprised and somewhat disappointed, and even the general public, that individual is allowed to return back. And many of the postings for the person who came back with a head bandage actually was somewhat commended for how tough she is and what an amazing athlete that they're able to come back. So I think we still have some work to do on, you know, getting to the point you're describing.
What would you like to see as guidelines, especially for younger players, girls and boys, I guess, for that matter, when it comes to soccer and heading the ball?
Okay. Well, we know that heading the ball itself isn't the primary cause of injury for what we're seeing for concussions. It's often related to the field itself, falling back, hitting the goal in some way, hitting another player's shoulder or head, as we saw yesterday in that game multiple times. So, you know, what do we need to do? And I think USA Soccer has already placed a limit on who can head and who can't. So we're seeing some of that that was being made really with not a lot of evidence, but it's a very nice, safe decision for USA Soccer. But what else needs to be done? I think we have to have a better sense of recognition. And as I described at the youth level, it's not always common to have a medical personnel on the field. So sometimes it's a parent or a trained medical person in the crowd that's making these evaluations. And I think if we can get to a point where we have greater coverage of somebody being able to diagnose and evaluate, is really important.
Do we need to train coaches more at the youth sports level, soccer and other sports, to do concussion protocols?
Education is always important, but often these concussion protocols don't even exist.
What do you mean?
Well, there is probably, it's not probably, there is known evidence that there are some organizations or leagues or whatever whose maybe their concussion policy isn't well known to everyone. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't exist in the coach's mind.
I see.
Maybe they're trained on how to recognize and what to do, meaning remove them. But what does that protocol look like after the youth player goes back home and is in the care of the parents and maybe the primary care provider? How do they make their way back on?
We're talking about head injuries in women's and girls' soccer and other sports with Tracy Sneddon. She's a pediatric nurse and an assistant professor in the School of Nursing at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a current or former soccer player yourself, youth or otherwise? Are you the parent or coach of soccer players? Do you worry a lot about the risk of concussions? Any girls or women out there in particular who have played the game, do you want to share your concerns or experiences, what you'd like to see happening on the sidelines? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about concussions and female athletes, especially in the sport of soccer. Tracy Sneddon is a pediatric nurse practitioner and an assistant professor in the School of Nursing at UW-Madison. She wrote a piece in USA Today about the issue, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have daughters who play soccer? Do you coach or have you coached girls soccer? Have you played yourself? Do you worry about head injuries, developing problems later in life? What happens on the sidelines when there is that head injury? How do coaches handle this? How do parents handle this? And do you have questions about head injuries and soccer? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tracy, I see sometimes this headgear that some soccer players wear. Does that do anything? Do we know if that's effective?
Another good question from you, Robin. You know, just recently, a large study occurred here at the University of Wisconsin. My colleagues actually, led by Tim McGuine, led this study that actually prospectively or enrolled individuals wearing different kinds of headgear. There was close to 3,000 high school soccer players that were monitored across two seasons. And out of that two seasons, 130 of them sustained concussions. Those 130, some of them had headgear on, some of them didn't. And they compared whether it was effective in decreasing concussion itself or decreasing the severity. And surprisingly to many, there was absolutely no change, no association between the wearing of headgear and the reduction of concussion. So I think we still have a lot to learn on what can change concussion rate and risk, but the headgear did not show a strong correlation.
I've seen there have been some new grants or donations to help fund research for women in soccer, women in sports in particular. What do we see going on out there?
Yeah, so I think finally women are getting some attention for some large funding. Specifically, the most recent funding came from the CLF, or an organization that actually focuses on long-term effects, even CTE, most specifically usually in the male and the football population. So it's really promising to see some dollars that are finally going to women to take a look at those long-term effects and potential associations with CTE.
In your column, USA Today, you start off telling the story of retired soccer great Abby Wambach. Can you share her experience a little bit?
Yeah, so I think, as you read that story, you could kind of get a feel for something we've seen over the past weeks watching the World Cup. And that was, for Abby, she had had a number of concussions. And when I described that specifically, she was playing in the pro leagues, and she did sustain a hit where she did lay on the ground for a number of minutes. Officially, the referee didn't determine it a severe injury. She might have told the referee she didn't need anyone. And she continued play. She stood up, wobbly, continued play. The extra time was added, and she continued to play through the game. Her final play in the game was actually another header, where after the whistle was blown, she dropped to the ground on her knees and appeared to be in duress, and somewhat not in good shape. So the team of trainers rushed out, and away she went. She was handled internally by the team and by, in that case, U.S. Soccer, and they admitted days later that that concussion or that head injury was not well handled. So they did actually, you know, admit that they could have handled it better, which was a substantial stride for what we're seeing. But we're still seeing things like that occurring. And is it the role of the athlete? Is it the role of the management team, the referee on the field? We've got a lot of work to do.
That highlights the idea that self-evaluation by the player is not going to be very reliable, I think, because one, you've taken a head injury, you're confused. Mm-hmm. You're not literally in your right mind at that moment. To the extent that players are sometimes, they're players, they want to stay in the game. They have a motive to err on the side of, I can still play.
Absolutely. And we've seen that already in a multitude of studies, most specifically studies at the high school football level that have been done anonymously. And those numbers are as high as 60% of them have admitted that they've not come forward with a concussion at the time of injury. Because, like you said, they're wanting to stay on the field, wanting to stay on the team, wanting to not look like whatever name we'd like to use. And we'll say cleanly, a wimp. So there's a lot playing into that. And I think at the female level, it also has, especially at the elite levels.
Talking about concussions and sports, specifically women and girls playing soccer and the risks that they can face and the uncertainties, what we don't know about concussions. Still time for you to join in with your questions and experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You mentioned that many sports, youth sports, don't have a concussion protocol, or if they do, coaches might not even know about it. What should be there? What information should be in every youth coach's and referee's hands when it comes to concussions?
I think we could use the model of the NCAA, which has done a very nice job coming up with a protocol that includes attention to safety. And we've also seen it from the CDC in their recent initiatives that have asked us to remove and evaluate. And finally, a lot of the U.S., actually every single state in the United States, has a concussion law that has a lot of these components. So what would that protocol look like? And I think first and foremost, it's assessing the individual and removing them from play immediately to be assessed in a quiet area. Secondly, that individual should not be returned to play at the same during the same game on the same day. And that's pretty well accepted across all laws. Another component of it, of course, is to have some sort of tiered return to play, as the NCAA and the NFL and many other high-profile organizations have. And I don't think we've seen that yet at the youth leagues, some sort of management where it's a graduated return to play. And I think that's because of the absence of medical personnel that are part of youth soccer and other sports.
We've been having conversations on this network for a lot of years now when it comes to concussions and sports. Do you feel frustrated with the slow pace of response that we seem to see in some sports?
Yeah, frustrated. I don't know if that's the word. I guess concern a little bit. I think we're making progress. I think, you know, what we're seeing is more attention to more than just single sports. We're seeing more attention to female injury. And so I would say I'm actually feeling positive about what we're seeing. Is it moving fast enough? Absolutely not. But not many things do unless there's substantial dollars and substantial attention to it. And I think we're finally getting that when we look at women's sports and we look at other sports besides the most common high contact sports.
Are we getting to a stage, staying on the positive note, maybe where girls in sports aren't an afterthought in this discussion?
I sure hope so. You know, that piece that you're referring to from USA Today did ask that we're launching large, you know, high enrollment studies that do look at females and their effects, both short and long term, instead of them being from studies that are ad hoc or post hoc, looks at, well, how does the female look from the male? I think we're truly making some progress there, and I'm pleased about that.
In football in particular, there's concern not just about that one impact that you look at and say, oh, that was terrible, but the repetitive impact that, say, the linemen and linebackers have again and again. Is there a similar concern in soccer, even if there are a series of routine headers, say, that don't look bad, that don't cause immediate injury, that this could have a cumulative effect?
Yes, I think there's some great attention there, that what we're realizing is that relying on individuals to self-report concussion is actually relying on the wrong measure. We need to rely on individuals who are spending years in high contact, repetitive, high head impact sports, and what does that mean? There's been some work at the research level on accelerometers measuring gravity forces that these individuals are taking to their head, but we also know genetically every person is different. Someone might have a 3G hit to their head and be absolutely fine. Others are not. So you're absolutely right in looking at the cumulative impact of a number of years of those micro, subclinical concussions and what that might be.
I am also a parent of women soccer players. My girls have played for about 11 years. I am probably more freaked out by the risk of concussion than anyone I know. It's been a tough balancing act for me on the sidelines as a parent. What is your advice as we wrap up for parents of daughters in particular getting into the game?
Yeah, so I think more than anything, we need to look at things that are going to affect the number of concussion. We know they're going to exist no matter what. It happens in all areas. And in soccer, we're going to see it to continue to occur from the hits that we described. But I think we need to focus on training our coaches, most specifically those parent-level coaches, giving them education to recognize concussion, ensuring that the drills and the practices are well supported for the youth, the developmental age that they are, and ensuring that parents are aware of what signs and symptoms look like after they leave the youth field.
Tracy, thanks a lot for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
Tracy Sneddon is a pediatric nurse practitioner and an assistant professor in the School of Nursing at UW-Madison. Talked through about head injuries and concussions among women soccer players, women and girls in the game. Still time for you to share your experiences. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.